planning on how to get you guys.
Where is the Ackerman?
All right. Have we closed the public?
Ackerman and King.
All right, we're going to open up a work session on House Bill, or Senate Bill 315A. Ray, we have amendments. Have you described them yet?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's the A6 amendments in which all people testifying to the bill agreed to those amendments.
Marvelous. The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A6 amendments to House Bill 315. I'm ready for that.
All right. Members, it has been suggested that we accept the amendments, the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 315A. Any discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? So ordered. The chair would entertain a motion.
So moved.
It has been moved that we move Senate Bill 315A to the full House, do pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 315A. The chair, as a courtesy to, let me ask the Democratic members, is Representative King or Ackerman coming back to committee?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Would the two of you like to vote on SJM 2 and SJM 7? I'll be happy to reopen those for you if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The chair is going to reopen a work session on SJM 2A. Representative Hobson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
All right. Are those recorded, Michael? All right. We're going to close a work session on SJM 2A. We're going to open a work session on SJM 7. Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
All right.
And Mr. Chair, I thank
yes.
you very much.
Well, wait,
thank
what
you,
about
Chair.
3961?
We can do that, too. And we're going to close the work session on SJM 7 and House Bill 3961. I'm going to reopen a work session on House Bill 3961. That is a referral to Ways and Means. And Representative Hobson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Mr. Chair, I want to vote aye, and I want to make sure that the record reflects that there are some continuing concerns about the constitutionality of the bill as it's currently written. And I don't know if that was in the record when you had your discussion.
It was well addressed, Representative.
But I'd be happy to refer it to Ways and Means and hope that those issues will be resolved before it.
Yes. Finally. And your vote is?
Yes.
All right. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3961. Thank you, members. I appreciate your participation.
And are we done?
Okay. Who would like to carry Senate Bill 315? Do I hear Representative Krieger? All right, Representative Krieger is carrying Senate Bill 315. We're going to close the work session, Senate Bill 315A. And we're going to move to a public hearing on Senate Bill 312A. And the Chair, Ray, would tell us a little bit about this bill and call for Department of Agriculture, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 312A prohibits the State Department of Agriculture from imposing civil penalties for violation of Oregon's organic food regulation or associated administrative rules if the action does not also violate the Federal Organic Food Production Act of 1990 at 7 United States Code 6501 to 6522. It repeals Oregon's organic food regulation on October 21, 2002, authorizes the State Department of Agriculture continuance of civil penalties imposed prior to October 21, 2002, implements changes to Oregon's adulterated, misbranded, or imitation food statutes on October 21, 2002, declares an emergency effective on passage. And Mr. Chair, there are -A2 amendments to this, and what the A2 amendments do is insert the Federal Register site as to adopted and published federal rules. So the reference to the transition from a state organics program to a federal organics program is clear within the federal.
All right, thank you, Ray. Chuck and Ron, please come forward if you would, please. Sean, you'll be up next. In fact, if you want to come forward, Sean, at the same time, let's do it all right now. Welcome, gentlemen. What are we doing here and why?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Krupp and members. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for Department of Agriculture. This is very strictly a housekeeping bill that provides for the transition between now and when the newly adopted organic food regulations fully go into effect. Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask the Administrator of our Food Safety Division, Ron McKay, to explain the bill in more detail for the committee and respond to any questions that you might have.
Ron, thank you. And for the record?
For the record, I am Ron McKay, the Administrator of the Food Safety Division, Oregon Department of Agriculture. The USDA National Organic Program went into effect April 21st, 2001. 18 months later, in October of 2002, all products on the market that are labeled organic must be in compliance with this national program. Now, there are a few differences between the existing Oregon organic statute and the national program. And what Senate Bill 312 does is it allows, during this 18-month transition period, it allows for products to be labeled as organic that comply with either the national program or Oregon's current organic program. Senate Bill 312 goes a little further, and it repeals the Oregon organic statute in October of 2002 when the national program goes into full effect. And again, as was mentioned, the Attorney General advised us to amend the bill, and that proposed amendment would insert the citation to the federal rules being incorporated, which simply gives the date, location of the Federal Register of the USDA National Organic Program.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Sean, welcome, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. We support Senate Bill 312 with the A2 amendments. We did work with the division, Food Safety Division, on putting this together and the choices that they had before drafting this particular bill, and we support the national organic program that has been adopted and would support that adopted at the state level, which this bill does. There was a few options and choices before this legislative session, before we went in here and actually adopting our own state program, which would more or less mimic this but have our own program, would have been an added program and a budget consideration as well. And so we fully support this particular bill and the program at the national level. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so to help this simple farmer understand what we're doing here, we've got national organic standards coming, and we're going to provide a transition period while those are being implemented, and then ours go away and the full national standards take effect. And that's what this bill is doing, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I wondered if I could ask this group, could we just call it organic until it becomes organic, since it's Oregon?
Oh, very good. Very, very good. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it. Anyone else like to testify? Hearing none, we're going to close a work session on Senate Bill 312A and open up a public, we're going to close a public hearing and open up a work session on 312A. Ray, we have an amendment, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the dash A2 amendments I described at the beginning that insert the Federal Register site as to adopt and publish federal rules.
Okay. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the amendment.
I move we adopt the amendment.
Okay. Members, it is moved that we adopt the dash A2 amendment to Senate Bill 312. Any discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? So ordered. Chair would entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move this bill, Senate Bill 312A, with dash two amendments to the floor.
With a due pass?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I was going to say that, with a due pass.
I'm sorry. I'm in a hurry. All right, members, any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Representative Nelson, since you have the humor with this bill, you get to carry it.
Keep my honor.
All right, thank you. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 312A. Thank you all. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 412A. Ray, tell us a little bit about this bill. Forestry, come forward if you would, and whomever else. Is here to talk about that. Welcome.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 412A allows counties to prohibit, but no other way, regulate forest practices on forest lands located outside an acknowledged urban growth boundary and for which an exception to an agriculture or forest land has been taken. It specifies that the Oregon Forest Practices Act applies to forest operations conducted within an urban growth boundary, except in areas where the local government has adopted land use regulations for forest practices. It defines land use regulations for forest practices within an urban growth boundary and it specifies the local regulation requirements. It also relieves the state forester of the responsibility to administer the Oregon Forest Practices Act within the affected area. Also, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the staff measure summary that came over with Senate Bill 412A has been corrected. So please, if you would take a closer look at this one than previous versions. I have checked with the people that have been working with this bill, and this version is correct.
But
Mr.
Right.
Chair.
Time on the correct one?
The one you got over from the Senate side is incorrect. The one that I gave you today with my name on it is correct.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. What are we doing with this bill and why?
Okay. Chair Krupp, members of the committee, that was a lengthy description of what the bill does. It actually does relatively a lot less than that. There are currently two situations in which the Forest Practices Act is addressed relative to what local government can or cannot do. The first is outside urban growth boundaries. Under current statute, counties may prohibit but not regulate forest practices. The prohibition could only occur if the operation is located outside an acknowledged urban growth boundary and an acknowledged exception to an agricultural forest goal has been taken. The second situation is within UGBs, where local government may regulate or prohibit, so they can do both instead of just prohibit. But by making the choice to do so, local government relieves the state forest of regulating forest practices. So that's the current situation. What we're trying to do with the changes is to make it clearer that in the case outside urban growth boundaries, that prohibit means just that, prohibit. And so the wording changes is to say may prohibit but no other manner regulate. And the issue we've had is that some local governments have misinterpreted what prohibit means and have attempted to regulate forest practices outside urban growth boundaries when the legislature's intent was clearly not to allow that. So that's the issue outside of urban growth boundaries. Inside urban growth boundaries, again, there was an intent to make some clarity. And the thrust on this is to make sure that local government goes through a logical process to adopt regulations, because we've had several occasions where either local government has adopted regulations that really didn't consider the scope of the Forest Practices Act and created a bunch of unintended consequences for themselves. For example, the Forest Practices Act covers roads, reforestation, chemical use, and many times local government will adopt a regulation that will say, we're just going to address tree harvesting, and by that action, it relieves the state forester of regulating the Forest Practices Act, so issues like reforestation are no longer covered. And so they've gone back and had to address those kind of unintended consequences. The second issue that's arisen in this process is sometimes local government has adopted regulations that were not intended to regulate forest practices. When they had an operation occur, they decided they wanted to apply them to forest practices, and that's caused an equal number of problems. So what this bill would do is require that if they do decide to regulate forest practice with urban growth boundaries, they would work with the Department of Forestry, Department of Land Conservation Development, and develop those regulations through a thoughtful public process to avoid those kind of unintended consequences. As part of this process, we work with League of Oregon Cities to address coordination issues, and the final purpose of this in Section 6 addresses some additional coordination elements that would provide local government copies of the written plans and our notifications that go with those kind of operations so they could engage in the process.
Okay, so again, to help me understand what it is that we're doing here, there's some confusion on forest practices and what can be done to either regulate or prohibit on the part of governments inside urban growth boundaries. And we're trying to clarify that. My question to you is, are we adding outside of urban growth boundaries? Are we adding, are we changing anything that's already in place?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, this does not change the policy at all outside of urban growth boundaries. It does seek to clarify that it is only prohibit and does not include any nexus or regulations. That's the current policy, and the wording that's been added is, but in no other manner regulate, to make it clear that prohibit means just that, prohibit.
Okay. All right. Members, questions? Yes, Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, Isn't there any way we can state it more clear than what it is?
Representative.
Counties, you don't have the right authority to mess with people outside urban growth boundary. Why don't we say it? What's this prohibit business? I saw that before, and it was difficult to work with.
Chair Krupp and Representative Krieger, the legislature adopted that term through a process beginning in the mid-'80s to try and reconcile the forest practices program with the land use program. And I think the term prohibit basically was trying to get at the notion that, look, if there's such a conflict with land use goals that you shouldn't allow forest practices at all, you got to prohibit them all. So that's the term they came up with. And it was clearly intended in the discussion at that time that that would get to the property taking issue because you would have to totally prohibit forest practices. To our knowledge, no county has done that. There has been several attempts to regulate, and again, that the term prohibit has been confused in that process. I think if we can come up with a better term, we'd be happy to do it. We think this helps clarify it to some degree, and that'll be helpful to all parties. And I guess in a matter of land use, the term prohibit and regulates, I think, the state of art, so it's not necessarily clear.
Okay. Representative Krieger, you look very skeptical, and that bothers
me. If there's anybody in this room that ought to have this figured out, it's me.
Yeah.
And I don't have it figured out.
That's what happened.
You know, I'm looking at the bottom of the bill. May prohibit. Now, if they did, totally prohibit all activity, can they do that?
That, Chair Krupp and Representative Krieger, that is the intent. That's the only option they had. The example we used back in the 90s when this was discussed last was, for example, let's say Douglas County felt that timber harvesting in the Umpqua corridor was such a conflict with scenic values. So they decided to zone that land through an exception to Goal 4 or 5 and say, look, forest practices so conflict with that Goal 5 resource that we need to totally prohibit forest practices. They would have that option the way the statute's currently written and the way this hopefully will clarify it of saying forest practices totally are prohibited. You can't harvest, you can't spray, you can't pre-commercial thin, you can't do anything. And the intent of the legislature in doing that was to give them a very definite choice that would basically get them to the property take issue. And again, that was the policy choice at the time. And, you know, our sense is that we want to be true to that policy choice, but make it clear that's indeed what they meant was totally prohibit. And where we've had the conflicts has been in counties, as another example, Wallowa County around Wallowa Lake, where the county wanted to regulate the amount of trees that could be harvested. And our position was you can't do that. You have a choice of saying no forest practices or forest practices are regulated by the Forest Practice Act. You know, we think that this helps clarify that. It's not perfect. I would agree with you there.
Representative Krieger, you are not satisfied, so tell me what's going on.
I'm not satisfied. I think I hope that he has a long, long life so that when the first suit goes to court, we can recall his words and bring him in to testify.
Okay, so down at the bottom it says counties, and we're deleting the word can, and we're saying the word may prohibit, and that's all new language, but in no other manner regulate forest practices. So in other words, we're saying a county can say, you can't log, period. But that's all they can say. They can't say how you can log.
Chair Krupp, that's correct.
Okay, and but today they already have the ability to say, you can't log, period. Correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm not adding anything to anybody out there. If I vote for this bill, it's going to cause me grief down the road because I'm not changing anything. I'm trying to clarify something, right?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, the intent of the language change is to retain the existing policy of the only option local government has is to prohibit, and the language offered is to make it clearer, we hope, and we do think it does do that by saying in no other manner regulate. That their only option is to prohibit. The other condition is that they do have to also take an exception to either goal 4 or 5,
right.
Or excuse me, goal 3 or 4.
Okay.
One more question.
Yes.
on the letter we got from League of Oregon Cities, bottom paragraph, we also will note for the record, in addition to the agreement on the bill language, the State Department has additionally agreed, adding language on the notification of operation form, user force operator, that contact welcomes prior to conducting a development activity within the urban growth boundary. Are they required to do that now?
Yeah. Chair Krupp and Representative Krieger, that was a compromise that we worked out with the Association of Oregon Counties, and the language has not been agreed to yet. The idea there was to provide some notification when an applicant does file a notification with the Department of Forestry that if that activity is going to result in some kind of development of a site within an urban growth boundary, that they would contact the local county planning department.
That would have to go through the board.
Representative Krieger and members of the committee, Chair Krupp, it wouldn't have to go through the board. It would be administrative process or notice on the notification form. And the issue that that's trying to address from the city's perspective is the land use change within an urban growth boundary issue. And the thrust of the language would be on the notification that if you are planning a land use change or other action that would go beyond forest practices, you should contact the city government prior to commencing that kind of activity.
Okay, hearing no additional questions, I'll Representative Nelson.
Yes,
that's Ted, that's Greg.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair and Ted and Greg, yeah, I'm a little confused on this. I guess some of my constituents feel that we already have a higher standard of forest practice and this, and requiring that contract loggers, you know, are certified, and why we need to change this.
Representative,
I guess I need to know because I have a hard time understanding the purpose.
Representative Nelson and Chair Krupp, the issue, and I read Mr. Purvis's testimony as well. I guess the issue he raised, I understand it, is the certification issue that some mill operators have implemented on their own, where they're asking their loggers before they work for them be certified under the Association of Oregon Loggers Pro Logger Program. And actually what that program is about is basically operators are required to go a certain level of training on forest practices or safety or purchasing, those sorts of things, so they are certified. And as part of the Sustainable Forestry Initiative that industry is implementing on their own, it really doesn't address forest practices per se. It's a training program. And this in no way affects that at all. And so it's kind of a juxtaposition of concerns, I guess. This relates to land use issues that local government can or can't do, and his concern appeared to be that some industry is imposing new standards on operators that raise a concern with them. I can't quite understand the linkage there because there isn't any.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. We're going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 412. We are not going to work the bill for the moment. And so we're going to move along to the last item on our agenda tonight, and that is House Bill 3924. And that is Representative Nelson's bill. And, Ray, we have some amendments, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The bill was first heard on March 26th. Was taken with an understanding that there would be amendments coming back. You have -1 amendments to House Bill 3924. What they do is define farm stands and other structures designed and used for the sale and promotion of farm crops and livestock as they relate to allowable uses in exclusive farm use zones. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Pardon?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative Nolan is quite correct. That was April 26th, not March 26th.
Because I had to follow up homework, and I haven't been delinquent for a month.
Okay. All right. Representative Nelson, these are your amendments, the dash ones, or no?
They are really not my amendments.
Okay.
They are Representative Ackerman's.
Okay.
And with the consensus of Vice Chair King and...
okay.
And I wish they were here right at this moment.
Yes, me too.
Because our goal was to do what we thought would facilitate helping these farmers. We just heard about these trade agreements. I think it's amazing that we're so concerned about what's happening to us internationally when we're doing the same thing to our farmers in our backyard, restricting free trade. So we attempted to give our farmers, who've already been through the pain, and give them a chance for some gain by restricting the type of property. So as Representative Nolan said, it couldn't be a bowling alley. We tried to meet the LCDC's requirements and Friends of Oregon and Farm Bureau by re-expressing our desire. We have no desire to be anything but an exclusive farm zone business, and we felt that we worked towards something fair and reasonable, as is requested by law. I believe our two attorneys would say that at this moment. That's fair and equitable. It gives our farmers an opportunity maybe to sell these crops that are going nowhere if we don't, and give them an opportunity to have some creativity in the way that they promote this their products without changing their purpose. They want to be farmers, like John Bernard's, on whose behalf I brought this bill, and his brothers and the other 17 or 19 kids in the Bernard's family who've owned these farms for a century or more. You know, this is their life, and there are many just like that. And I thought of this one, this example, if I could just go one more minute, please. I know it's late, but, you know, my my little dad was worked in a service station. He was the best thing that ever happened to me. He came into my life when I was 15 and in Matador, Texas, in the heart of ranching country in Panhandle of Texas, and we had Bob's oil field, and right in the center of it, and there were other opportunities for people to stop and go buy gas. So the people who owned the service station brought a whole cage of rattlesnakes, and to this day, anybody that's gone through Highway 66 or been through the Panhandle of Texas will talk about the rattlesnakes at Bob's oil well. You could access this cage, but it brought people in, and this is just one example. The fuel wouldn't have sold. It was right there. Wouldn't have sold in this community if they hadn't had this cage of snakes. Now, I'm not suggesting our farmers, you know, gather up some rattlesnakes, but if they did, I guess it would be an education. But I'm just saying this is an example of what sometimes is necessary, because this community was economically depressed. There's 1,000 people in my hometown of Matador, Texas, maybe not that many now. But a lot of ranchers that have been hurt, and a lot of them had to now sell gravel instead of ranch. And so, you know, I know I've lived this life. So I'm just saying that's an example. We want to give the farmers an opportunity at this point in their lives. Hopefully, you know, they won't be spending the rest of their lives running farm stands. At this time, it gives us a chance to buy Oregon. It gives our citizens a chance to, you know, enjoy Oregon products and enjoy the farms. I think it's great that it's bringing the city out to the farming community. And I think, like Representative Ackerman said, you know, he thinks it's a treat to get to go out and enjoy it. So we want to give them a place to carve pumpkins and, you know, have some kids to come into their stand, carve pumpkins, or have food contests, or how to make raspberry jelly, or something out of the raspberries, or how to weave baskets. So we're just giving them that opportunity. The purpose is to sell farm products, be agricultural, and I hope I have done what's right. It's my first time I've ever done this, and can't think of anybody more deserving than John Bernard's to have a chance to make a living.
All right. Thank you, Representative. The chair would like to call Tom Brawley. Tom, if you'd like to come forward. And Don, you want to come with him? Don, wake up. Might as well come on up with him. Welcome to you both again.
Thanks,
for the record,
Jeff.
And your comments.
For the record, my name's Tom Brawley. I'm a farmer, a commercial farmer down by Jefferson, South Marion County. It pleases me to leave the farm on a nice day like today and come here and find the Ag Committee hard at work at this hour in the evening, same as the hours that we keep on the farm. So I thank you for that. I really do. It impresses me. So I thank you.
I was here at 6.
I got up at 6, so you beat me. You beat me.
All right.
Well, now I was bringing in the eggs at 4.
Kitty.
No, the reference to NAFTA and GATT in an earlier bill pleases me. I think it's a real problem and has been, and I want to thank you, a little sideline, but it relates to this because, just as the vice chair said, we are talking about a method of moving farm products with the farm stand. And so I can tell you that the farm stand, to me, it used to be an item that I could build in a couple of days and hook on with a tractor and pull it up by the road and put some vegetables in it and have the farm wives and the farm ladies work in it and bring in a little extra money. However, once I looked through the bill here, I've changed my mind. I decided that these 15 pages are complicated, and I no longer can do it in 2 days. I'm going to have to change my time frame. However, that isn't to say that I don't applaud your efforts, because I understand they're on behalf of the farmer, and Lord knows many of us farmers have value-added systems on our farms. We've had to figure out ways to bring in money. And so this effort I applaud, and I think it's a step in the right direction. I would like to say that there are many areas addressed in this, in both the amendment and the bill. We talk about structures, we talk about food, we talk about livestock, we talk about implements, and all those can really elude to larger things like dealerships, livestock auctions, restaurants, or whatever. And our concern is that this does not become a commercial enterprise out in the EFU zone. It needs to be farm-related. And in your bill, I haven't found that it is directly farm-related or requires that the produce that's vended in this, it comes from the farm. And so I would recommend that you do that, that you go back, rework this, and have the requirement in there that it does relate directly to the farm that it's on, and set a percentage and require it. And so if you can hold off and rework this during the interim, I think it has merit. I just think it needs some pluses and minuses.
Mr. Chair, I want to respond.
Okay.
Representative Nelson and then Representative Doss.
Yes, Mr. Brawley, I don't, first of all, is it Brawley?
Yes, it is.
Thank you very much for your input. I hope you know that this is the statute, not our bill. I mean, I'm going to show you where the changes are. If you think I came up with 15.
No, I know your first change is on lines 5 to 11 on page 3.
Okay, so that's all there is. So that's the same thing, and it's in there 3 times. So I want you, would you look at that with me?
No, I have. Obviously, I know the lines, and I
well,
know
obviously,
where we are.
You don't know, because it says the structures are designed and used for the sale of farm crops and livestock grown on farms. Now, I don't know how you can get much more restrictive of what it is that we're selling.
There's no percentage there.
Well, does somebody restrict you from a percentage?
Yes, you could. Are we talking about 5% of the crop that has to be farmed? Or is it total farm products and no amenities?
What help me? I don't understand it. If you mean, Mr. Chair, Mr. Brawley,
sure.
Do you mean, can you sell your whole crop from a farm stand?
No. Let's take a table of goods in the farm stand. And do they have to be totally agricultural? Can we sell, if we have coffee on the side, do we have to have grown the beans on that farm?
Mr. Chair, not the way I understand this, because that's the part that we're now allowed to do. We previously, as farmers, were not allowed to do that because someone called that public entertainment. But we allow a winery to serve a glass of wine in an exclusive farm use zone. So I think a farmer ought to be able to sell cranberry juice if he grows cranberries.
And the winery grows wine. Grows grapes. See, so what?
Exactly.
And I think we're really talking about the same thing. It's just that I'm saying to you, you haven't put, as I read it, figures on this, so that we don't know what percent has to come from the farm, or does it come from the farm that the farm stand is owned by, or is it just strictly agricultural produce? Lord, everything in a grocery store is agricultural produce, almost. You see. So does it need to come from the farm that's in that particular county, in that particular, on that land itself, in that one ownership? I mean, I think there are more definitions need to be put on this that says, where do these ag products come from? What percent of what's there? Surely it's not going to be 100% of the ag products that are, or of the products that are sold are going to be grown on that very farm on which the land sits.
Tom, in regard to that specific point, the language in the amendment says crops and livestock, and this I'm on line 3 of the first page, crops and livestock grown on farms in the local agricultural area. Now, are you saying that if you have a farm stand and your neighbor wants to come sell some of their products, maybe they grow squash and you don't, and they want to come sell their squash at your stand. Are you saying that they shouldn't be allowed to come sell at your stand? Because you're talking about specifically on that farm's land.
Right.
I'm
not saying that. And that would be, to me, that would be ludicrous. All I'm saying is that it needs to specify how much needs to be ag products. How much of this, of what's vended, needs to be ag products? It doesn't say that. It doesn't say how much needs to come from that particular farm. And I think that's a key thing, that it should have a certain percentage come from the farm on which this is located, because we're talking about EFU ground. This is exclusive farm use ground, and that should have been able to produce. Otherwise, you're using land that nothing was produced on under that ownership, and bringing in ag products from other places and vending it there, and that to me is a supermarket.
Okay, so you're
something should have come from the farm that this is located on.
Okay, so your concern is that if there's no kind some kind of standard in terms of some of that product, 50%, 70%, whatever, 30%,
right.
Needs to come from the local farming area as opposed to something that would allow a farm stand to evolve into a 7-Eleven.
That's exactly right. Or a farm stand that brings in apples from China.
Okay, so, okay. That's the other part of your concern. Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. I'm just trying to understand.
No, and I appreciate your questions. I appreciate your questions.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Brody, it specifically says from the local area.
Mm-hmm.
It's agriculture from the local area. So that preempts.
Okay. All right, I threw the China thing.
Heaven help us, we're bringing in 300
because of the next
tons
gap.
Of elk, and we should be growing our own elk, too, you know. So I'm not going to sponsor.
That's right.
I'm not going to sponsor the Chinese peepaw. Sorry.
Do you have a problem with the language that says for the sale of incidental retail items?
No, I don't. But I think there should be a percentage on it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you're looking for some limitation.
Yes. Some guidelines to say that this is not going to evolve into a commercial venture that would be not tied to the farm itself.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Representative Doyle, you're next, and then Representative Krieger.
maybe one thing that might help clarify this a bit, and Tom, maybe you'll see if this goes with what you're saying, is that on line 11C, there's a word that says and, the word and.
Yes,
do you have the engross version?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just to go through it, it says farm stands, including structures designed and used for the sale and promotion of farm crops and livestock grown on farms in the local agricultural area, which is what current law is, mm-hmm. without the percentage. Then right after that, so it says it's designed for use of crops and livestock. Then it says and for the sale of incidental retail items.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes, I think, to your supermarket concerns,
mm-hmm.
or actually for non-agriculture concerns.
Right.
Because if we use the word and there, what we're basically saying is that the farm stands can be basically, it could be for not only for both items, but since there's no percentage, you could have 99% incidental retail item.
That's exactly right.
And 1%
right.
farm.
Right. To take it to the extreme, possibly. That's right. I agree.
Question?
Okay. I represent Krieger and then represent Smith.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure out if you have the two commodities, farm products and something else, you're trying to go to a percentage, and you're rotating your perishables faster, so they generate a higher percentage because you run them through, but the toothbrush may sit there 6 months. Are you talking about the percentage of the value of what's sold or the percentage of what's stocked, not taking into effect how fast you're going to rotate it through? I don't see how you'd ever manage it with a percentage.
We're talking here in generalities, and I don't expect the state of Oregon to track toothbrushes or go out and check this farm stand. I think that on a routine basis. Again, I have this simplistic idea of a farm stand, but I also, because I'm a farmer and I farm EFU ground and we own EFU ground, I would not want to see something come out into the EFU ground that is totally unrelated to agriculture. And I don't know, I'm trying to help you get through this by saying perhaps a percentage on this would be the best thing, a way to tie it continually to the farm and to agriculture.
You have
to. And it's in our best interest. And again, I'm not,
Mr. Chair,
I'm not against your idea. I think it's good, and I think we need farm stands, and I think we need value added. I'm saying let's not bring something forth that we can't control, and it really does not totally add to the purpose.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, please keep your question in mind. Okay, Representative Smith, you're next.
Do wineries have a limitation of 25% on
incidental wine? It wouldn't surprise me if they do.
Anybody know here?
Not a farm stand. The restriction on incidentals right now is on farm stands.
No, they is the answer.
In the Representative Doyle, in the statute, to the best of your knowledge, is there any limitation on the types of things that wineries can sell in EFU? In regard to the subject of incidental items and that types of things?
I don't know.
Okay.
I know I'm just looking at this issue.
You are.
It's not a farm stand, so that's
right.
Why it would.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what you mean that. We had some other discussion, as you know, at the other hearing on this regarding wineries and why they're allowed the latitude that they are. I've been given a reason, however, I'm not satisfied on that, but I'm sure that's for another issue. It seems to me farm stands are being disproportionately singled out in
mm-hmm.
the area.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. And I don't think in statute they're being treated justly.
Representative Knowles, your thoughts?
I don't know if my question is most appropriately addressed to Mr. Brawley or to Mr. Schallenberg.
Schallenberg
isn't gaveled in yet.
Uh-huh.
The question I have is the current statute does have a limitation, and it is on total sales, regardless of inventory turn. It's total sales, which I presume to be on an annual basis, although the statute is moot on that, but I would imagine when it's moot that you'd mean over some specified period of time, probably usually a year. My question is, and what's interesting to me is the original bill expressly removed that limit.
Right.
So one has to imagine that there was a reason that that language was creating a problem, and I never understood what that problem was. So my question to one of you is, has that language been workable, and has it helped preserve farmland for farm uses?
Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representing Nolan. Yes, it has been workable. In our opinion, that is why we don't have 7-Elevens in the farm zone, because there is a percentage restriction on the total sales of incidental items that can be sold. And that would be the concern that we would have with this particular language. There isn't any restriction. You wouldn't have to sell any farm produce the way this is drafted. In addition to that, the language doesn't even require that this be owned by a farmer. I'm not saying that the original language does. It doesn't either.
It either.
As far as that goes. But
now we restrict ourselves more. I'm sorry I brought it up, Mr. Chair, because now you're going to restrict this more. So
the combination of the two things.
I mean, it's just wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, the combination of the two things, not having a restriction on incidental items and no ownership requirement, that combination certainly would allow a 7-Eleven in the farm zone under this provision.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I get a sense both from our earlier hearing on this and from the discussion I've heard so far that there is some level of consensus among the participants about simultaneously protecting farm use, farmland for farm use, but at the same time providing some assistance or flexibility for farmers to be able to sell their crops and incidental items. However, there may not be absolute consensus on what that incidental items means, but some flexibility to allow this activity. And I think what we're struggling with is that there are probably different senses among the members of the committee and other participants about what's broke and how broke it is. And therefore, until we can come to some agreement on that, it's hard to identify what the fix should be. And I think it's a good thing that Representative Nelson has identified this issue and taken the leadership to bring it forward. It sounds like the effort isn't quite there to achieve what she's trying to achieve, that I suspect everybody supports, without creating loopholes that nobody intends.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
The response, I'll answer your question, or Representative Smith's question, is no, there have been no restrictions placed on the wineries and their EFUs, and sure, they grow grapes and serve wine, but they also sell everything else from parkas to, you know, every type of ceramic. I mean, it's unbelievable. We even have, as we heard at our last hearing, we have 3,000 and 4,000 people that show up at a rock concert. Ray Charles was there and numerous others. So we've allowed the wine industry to grow and go. In fact, we just voted earlier today to help them again with another tax benefit, and I'm glad for it. I live in the heart of wine country. So our very own agency, not just the Farm Bureau in this case, or one or two members of the Farm Bureau, but our very own land use, this was their answer as late as 3:15 today. We've just been looking the other way. Well, isn't that just great? We let the farmers starve to death, but we'd help another industry. So I'm just saying, I think it's time that we treat our farmers, the heart of America. I don't care. I was one. My father was one. I understand this. It's time we treat them with the same respect. And if that farmer's wife wants to make potholders or quilts, and that turns out to be more than 25% of that operation, by damn, she should be able to do so. Because it's hard enough to make that much money from cucumbers. So I'm just saying, when we start restricting, you know, the farmers, totally unlike any other industry. I've been in business for 30 years, and I understand it very well. This is the only industry in America that isn't allowed to promote its products. No wonder everybody has barreled over them, from the international trade agreements to everybody that's importing anything. I know it. We haul their freight. I can tell you the balance of trade in those 747s. I'm just saying, this needs to stop, and it needs to stop now. And as I said last week, Don, when you weren't here, we don't need it. We're not going to need a Farm Bureau, because there's not going to be any Mr. Brawley's left. He's smart enough. He was ahead of the game. He's smarter than probably a lot of these younger ones that, you know, haven't withstood and don't have money in the bank. Y'all read the story, and I'll pass it out again, of this young man. He just lost $250,000 at whatever the place, the Agri-Frozen. He didn't have anything left. He's trying to put up a windmill. So it'll interest people to come to Farmer John's stand. They can't even have a goat in a cage and put a walkway to this cage, because that's called public entertainment under the rules, Don, that you want to keep in the statute. Now, you don't want that. You love these guys just as much as I do.
Don, you're
something is wrong.
Well, but I'd like to respond.
Okay.
If you want to think about it for a minute. Yeah, give you a shot here a minute. This has been distorted, and I'm sorry, Representative Nelson. Your view of what I'm saying here is not what I'm saying. I am 100%, and I said it earlier, for value added. I'm 100% for farmers being able to make a living on their farm, and being able to come up with alternative methods of making livings, just as you said, Representative Nolan. There just needs to be some way of controlling it. There needs to be some way of doing it. I don't want to see any farmer starve, because I'm one myself.
I know.
And my sons are full-time farmers, and so I have no reason to do that. I don't want to do that, but I do want to see some limitation on this. Otherwise, it should be a business that's placed within the urban growth boundary. And there are places for both of those. And a farmer can operate a business within the urban growth boundary also. It's not beyond the limits.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to that.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Brawley, they could if they hadn't just lost every single thing, dime they had, and they can't sell their vetch, it's in some dang silo. If it doesn't sell this year, there's nothing from that. There was nothing from Agri-Frozen. You know, I don't know what's happening to us, but somewhere on earth, we need to give our farmers the opportunity to be creative and market. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, my husband was a salesman, and you know, as an agronomist pomologist, to this day, I have to say, one of the best salesmen on earth, and I'm not bragging. But, you know, when we lost our shirts and potatoes in Riverside County, there were the crummiest potatoes at the store. Safeway wouldn't take any of our product in Hemet Valley, Riverside County, California. Well, we got busy and marketed our potatoes. I mean, we let people come to our field and, you know, dig all the potatoes they wanted, 32-ounce potatoes. Now, that was creative. We had to do flyers. We'd have all sorts of things. I mean, we could have baked potato fests, you know, to get people to come, barbecues. Y'all come. And it made a difference. And I know what it's like to, and maybe, you know, when you're 25, like these young people are 30, but when you get a bill the next day for $91,000 a sprinkler pipe, that you can't pay for because you couldn't sell your potatoes at Hearst. And then the next day you get one for the trucks you just bought, and then the next day you get one for the house you just bought, and you got a newborn baby. Something's wrong. And we don't care. So I'm just saying, I'm willing, y'all work on it. You know, we'll never please Friends of Oregon, Farm Bureau, LCDC, or anybody. I hope to God we help in some way meet the livelihood needs of these farmers that need it. And nobody does that. Nobody tells any other business, you know, whether they can sell their products in baskets, whether they can have scales, like I explained the other day, with 10 pounds of corn sitting on the scales, because that's promotion. Just maybe as farmers, we need to think like Doug Nelson did and think promotion. How do you make it happen when you got mouths to feed? But in Oregon, we're not letting them. And we apparently have a tough time with, you know, standing up for them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Doyle.
Two things. First is that ORS 215.452 does describe wineries, and it also states that wineries are only to be involved in the sale of wines and items directly related to wine, the sales of which are incidental to retail sale of wine on site. Just to affirm at least the current status of that statute.
So there's no percentages there, but they're saying that the incidental items have to be wine related.
Must be wine related. Correct.
Must be wine related.
There are no restrictions that there can't be public entertainment. If you could continue, I mean, those are totally left out.
Is
and they
that
came
a
later.
Where else in the statute, Representative?
There is nothing that I could see initially relating to entertainment.
Well, no restriction.
I see.
You know, I
Bob Rendy is shaking his head, so he has some knowledge of this, and he's scheduled to talk here momentarily, so we should ask that question of him when he comes forward. Representative?
I guess the second thing is, and I know we're not in work session at this point, or we're still supposed to be in a hearing where we're asking questions, but my concern is that the representative from McMinnville does not agree with having EFU zones. And Tom or Don, maybe you can respond to the concern she expressed that, the purpose of having farmland in EFU zone to protect the farmland as opposed to making it commercial.
Mr. Chair, I'll respond to that.
I've asked the question.
Please let him.
I don't think that. You just said I don't understand it, and I don't think that.
I've just asked the question. Representative, please. Okay.
No, I don't understand. I did not say that, and I understand EFU.
Okay.
And I respect them. I started off with that.
Please allow the question to be answered, and then I will absolutely allow you to respond to that. Okay. There's a protocol we have to follow here. Okay. Do that one. Please respond. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Don Schellenberg, Farm Bureau. The purpose of land use planning and the purpose of zoning and agricultural zones, one is to protect farmland. That's one of the others, one of the purposes. The other purpose, and really the main purpose, is to group like activities together to prevent conflict. And in a farm zone, agricultural production takes place. Farmers are moving equipment up and down the roads and that kind of thing. Sometimes offensive odors, dust, noise that people may or may not appreciate that aren't from the farm. Exposure to that can be good. We're not saying that can't be that exposure. Our only concern would be that it doesn't conflict with the production of agricultural commodities in the zone. And I think that's the purpose of land use planning. The purpose of creating exclusive farm use zones is for the production of agriculture. The sale of agricultural products can occur in the farm zone. We're not opposed to that. Representative Nelson, they certainly support what you're trying to do here. We just think that there maybe needs to be some sideboards. Again, the thing I would point to is, you know, you don't even have to, doesn't have to even be owned by a farmer. It doesn't have to be in conjunction with farm use. The way the current proposal is. So that would be a concern that we'd like to address. Mr. Phil Ward, the Director of the Department of Agriculture, was in this room just a few days ago talking about farm labor housing. And he made some comments that I thought were telling, and this will support your position, Representative Nelson. That is, he said that agriculture brought in $3.4 billion in the last year. That was farm gate value. Then he went on to say that agriculture spent in producing that farm gate value, they spent $3.4 billion. Well, if you take 3.4 from 3.4, you get zero net return to agriculture. So, Representative Nelson, that certainly supports your endeavor here to try and make it easier and provide other ways, additional ways, that agriculture and farmers can support themselves, and we're totally supportive of that. I think all we're saying is we just want to be careful how we do that so that the farm zone remains for farmers and the production and the sale of their products.
Well, in light of that, one of my concerns is a section that we had not yet discussed, and that's where a farm stand structure can be designed and used not only for food service, but also for banquets and public gatherings. I don't understand this clearly, but where it has indoor plumbing with a capacity for no more than 30 people. Sounds like a restaurant to me, but now we have Grange Halls out in EFU zones, what would this do to an EFU zone property?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doyle, we're not saying those kinds of things can't occur, and they may be able to occur under other statutes. Whether they should occur under the definition of a farm stand might be another question. There are gatherings that do occur, and Representative Nelson mentioned the wineries and some of the big gatherings that they have. Those aren't done, I do not believe, and Mr. Rendy can correct me if I'm wrong, aren't done under the auspices of a winery. I think they go get other permits under other provisions of the law to do that. I assume we could do the same thing on the farm if we had some particular
Well,
thing that
Don, would, you know, in that regard, you know, for instance, we go up to, and I say we in the legislature, there are many parties that are provided by various groups for legislators after the close of business at a winery up the road that is clearly in EFU land, and they bring catered food in, and it's a big party, and there's 100 and some people there. How can we do that and yet not allow the same thing to occur around the farm stand?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying that we can't do that. What I'm suggesting, and again, I may be wrong, and if you'd ask Mr. Rindy this question, I'm sure he can answer it. I think they're probably doing that under a different provision than under the winery law, what's allowed for wineries. And we, as farmers, may be able to do the same thing under that same law.
I see. Okay.
We may not have to do it under the provisions of a farm stand.
So you're saying, Don, that you think there might be a provision in the law somewhere else that would allow a farmer to conduct similar, I mean, if her folks, the Bernards, to have the same kind of banquet party for legislators out on their farm that we do up the road at a winery, that there's some of the law that would allow us to perhaps do that. Okay. All right. So that's clarified for me. Now, responding to Representative Doyle's comments, if you'd like.
Yes, I'd like to, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to respond to Representative Doyle, because when I started this whole public testimony last week, you know, I started with, we have no desire to change the FUs, and we have a desire to give the farmer within that EFU an opportunity to sell his product. So when you just said that, you know, I apparently did, the representative from McMinnville, which who is me, Donna Nelson, did not believe in EFUs, I never, ever have said that. I never would say that. I believe in them. I think they're very important, and I think, you know, I think you'll find that I've been a big proponent of that in my neighborhood. So, but what I, my biggest concern is if you live in a EFU and you have not been able, because of difficult circumstances, not only yours, to sell your produce that's grown on this EFU, it's all for naught. Now, I guess we could, like they said, we can just, you know, roll over it and, you know, let the bankers come take it over and then sell it to somebody else, and we can continue doing business like this the rest of our lives. Or we can give them an opportunity to save their lives. And I think it's time to give them the same opportunities. And in the statutes, and I've read it so many times, I can almost quote them to you, there is only restriction for farm stands as it comes to public entertainment. There is no restriction, and, you know, work with 200 lawyers, and the lawyers drafted this, and we sat with, you know, our team sat with the lawyers here, and, you know, there is no restriction for public entertainment as relates to wineries or promotion. There is zero. But on the farm stand, in that statute, now we'll find many things, and I was hesitant to bring this up when the Bernard family came to my first town hall and told me this story. I mean, I have great respect for this family, but I was hesitant to bring it up because of this very thing that just came to happen. You're going to find out how crummy these were, are written, these statutes. I mean, you're, and we just did that, and I was apprehensive about doing it because I, you know, I can read pretty good, and I already realized that there are many things that aren't in there that probably should have been or y'all intended to be in there long before now. So, you know, I don't know what to say today. I don't know to say let's forget it, let's work on it, because now I have a fear for making the farmer's life worse than it was before. And if John Bernard's can't have a, you know, sidewalk out to the goat so the kids can go, you know, pat the goat, fine. And if they can't have a haze in the, you know, whatever you call those things in the pumpkin patch and have a, you know, motorized cart pulling kids through the, you know, green beans, well, you know, this is all for naught. And that's promotion. I don't want to be the cause of more stricter rules, and Lord knows, this is anybody, it doesn't need it. It's this group of people.
Representative, or Chair Croft, the other thing we haven't talked about, and it may be in the Bernard's favor, is a conditional use situation where they approach the county and talk to them about their desires and things to do on their property. And that's I don't know if they've been down that road, but I've seen many things granted under conditional uses. And that involves the neighbors. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
I think one of the points that Representative Nelson's trying to get at, and I think most of us agree, is there ought to be some parity for us as farmers, and I'm a farmer also, Tom. There ought to be some parity between what we can do as what other folks are being allowed to do. Now, and I don't know if they're going to get conditional. I don't know if the winery up the road up here that has these big banquets for us and the legislature has a conditional use permit or not to allow them to do that. I don't know what procedure is allowable. I think we need to come to some. What I'm interested in seeing as chair of this committee is coming to some understanding of this issue as a matter of fairness, and that understanding that we're in very difficult economic times for farmers. And if the current law prohibits farmers from being able to do some things like what she's describing and what I described earlier at Lone Pine Farms just north of Eugene on Santa Clara, that if those kinds of things are being prohibited because they're being interpreted in a statute
as something really far more than what they are, then we ought to be able to make some accommodations in the statute, or at least in the rules, to be able to accommodate these things in light of the very difficult economic times and what I think are perhaps forever an industry that's changing forever and may never come back to where it has been for many years that we have enjoyed the success of. So that's what I'm interested in seeing us get to with this issue, and I think we can get there. But I'm most interested in the parity issue. I don't think it's fair that other people can do this and we can't as farmers. I don't want to see Knott's Berry Farm out there, and I don't want to see 7-Elevens next door to me where I live. On the other hand, I'd like to see my neighbors, and 2 miles down, or a mile and a half down the road, they have a little farm stand. And they sell flowers, and they sell produce that they grow, and they grow it at various times of the years. And I want to make sure that they can do that and survive. So I'd like to see us move forward with this. And with that, I'm going to ask the next two individuals who are signed up to testify, who have been very patient. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr.
To come forward. Thank you, both. Carrie and Bob Rindy, please, if you would come forward. And I know you're both not with the same organization, but I'm going to ask you to sit here so we can hear your thoughts at the same time here. There's no doubt we'll have questions of you. Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome.
Chair. For the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation Development, and I'm happy that Carrie is here with me, since, as you may recall from last time, you have me at a disadvantage. I don't generally do this portion of our statute. Ron Eber does that, and unfortunately you picked another night when he couldn't be here. We did delegate someone to help on this, and unfortunately due to lateness of hour, he can't be here either. And due to the lateness of the hour and my lack of dinner, those Chinese apples are sounding real good right now.
I like to predict
some potatoes.
I have two corn.
Mr. Chair, we continue to have concerns with the provisions, and I think I don't want to take much of your time because I think that they are very similar to what you already have heard. If I could clarify a couple of things. There are opportunities for example, home occupations and for processing facilities and sale of processing facilities within other provisions in the statute. There is the ability to have one-time special events, such as those that we know occur on wineries, but which could occur on any farm property, one-time special events, such as a big wedding. But what we're talking about here is structures for banquets, and that difference is the source of our concern. The wineries are allowed to have these things in the same manner as regular any other farm. It's not any different for a winery that wants a one-time special event permit from the county. I think you could write this to take care of the Bernard situation, and I think we would be happy to try to write something that would do that. It, as I understand the situation, and again, I'm not involved in all the discussions on that, but the train or hay rides, I think if the statute said that train and hay rides in association with a farming operation would probably draw far less protest than this language. I'm not certain of that until you have your hearing, but it's been my experience that if you try to be and to narrowly try to address the problem at hand, that sometimes that might bring less opposition. And so I'll just throw that out as an idea, and of course you could see whether it flies. But I think that there's probably certainly a lot of hayrides going on at any rate, and I don't know to what extent counties have banned those. The train tracks are a structure. I think that's the issue in Yamhill County. Therefore, we're talking about a structure as addressed by this. Finally, I again think that the 25%, just to touch on it for a second there, the thing that we have to remember is that that also works to the advantage of farmers, because there are certainly counties that would restrict it further. But it's there in the statute, it says 25%, and the county wants to say, well, that's too bad, we don't want you to sell anything more than 10% incidental. Because the number is there in the statute, that isn't permitted. So it works both ways. I think it's clear that 25% is still incidental, and yet it's a pretty generous amount of incidental sales. And so I would just warn that if you take it out, you might have the other effect in several counties that wasn't something that you anticipated.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Rendy, have you ever sold 25% of incidentals?
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Nelson, no, I've never done that.
Okay. This is what I think we're facing. You know, when we write the rules, we've not done it. In fact, they used to say those who can do and those who can't teach, and that used to always, you know, make me upset. But here we have individuals that are writing rules that aren't the farmers starving to death. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate you have a job to do. But unless you've been there and we know what we're talking about because we have done it, it's really hard to identify. So anyway, when we start saying you can have a hayride, you can have a train, then we have to say you could have a horse, you could have a llama, you could have a goat, you could have a wagon, then you could have a covered wagon, and then you could have a, I mean, dear God in heaven, I don't know how the state ever became the dictator of our farmers. We've done the same thing to schools, though, and I'll continue to work the rest of my life to get the unfunded mandates off the schools, just like I will off of the farmers, off of the businessmen. I don't know how on earth the Farm Bureau or the LCDC or any other group became the dictator of how a farmer should live his life. It is wrong. And so here we're doing this. We're going to specify we don't do that for Oregon stationers. We don't do it for a large trucking company. We don't tell them whether they can ship, you know, 25% of bulk items and, you know, 75% of this sized items. And why we're doing this to these farmers, I have no concept, but this should not happen. And you talked about home occupations. We are restricted. In those statutes, it tells us what we can do with the food processing, tells us that the farm stand cannot be a residence, you know. So there are restrictions that are in there.
Bob, how is it that, and there's a couple of very high-profile wineries being built right now in the state, big projects. How is it that the winery up the road up here that we're referring to and some that are under construction can have these large banquet rooms in them, in their construction as part of their facility, and hold numerous events time after time after time, from legislative things to weddings, to all that. I mean, do they have to go out each time and get a permit to do that, or? I'm having real trouble getting my arms around that.
Chair Krupp, and also if I could, in response, because I think this relates to the previous question that Representative Nelson was putting to us. So we don't write these rules. These are laws that the legislature has written, and nor do we enforce them. That is done by local governments. There are very many wineries that were constructed and banquet facilities prior to the restrictions that we're looking at that came in about 10 years ago. So that's part of why you see these out there. I'm speaking on hearsay here. It's my understanding that there are some more recent wineries where the problem is at the building permit stage. The winery is allowed as per the statute, and the winery comes in and with a plan for a building that's a winery. And to the extent that a county wants to be very diligent and make sure that there's nothing in that construction plan that could be later used for a banquet hall, I think these laws will be enforced. But I don't want to speak for any of the counties that may have allowed these, and I don't think that I think if there had been a challenge or is a legal challenge to them, you'll probably find that there could be a pretty good case there. But I just don't have the answer on that, because we are not going out and you know, trying to find wineries and make sure that they're complying with 100% with these statutes. That's really the local government's.
Right. Okay. So, Jerry, you look like you went in on this.
No, I was.
Oh, okay. All right.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, I was actually learning some. I think that I myself have not been involved in any specific complaints or issues relevant to wineries that I would add to this discussion in terms of what they are allowed to do and what not.
Jerry, have you been involved in specific complaints or issues involved this farm stand issue, like Blueberry Cafe or the Bernard issue?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, just for the record, so I...
Please.
Myself on. My name is Carrie Kirshner. I'm a staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. I am somewhat familiar with John Bernard. I'm not familiar with his issue. I have just seen him in agricultural newspapers and stories. So I am aware of who he is as a farmer. 1000 Friends of Oregon itself, it was before my tenure. I do not believe we actually got involved in the Blueberry Cafe issue, although that is relevant to the discussion here, I believe. I have, as you all may know, many of our policies and procedures are helped, assisted by a farmer advisory committee comprised of farmers throughout the state. I did attempt to try to run this by several of them so that I would have perhaps some personal or some individual stories to bring. In my discussions with two farmers that I was able to have, they did have substantial concerns about allowing convenience store type operations, what they saw as non-farm stands out in farm zones. In particular, there are some concerns by farmers of some farm stands not currently operating under the statute. I myself, though, have not been involved in any individual complaints about them.
Okay. Do either one of you have problems with the language in, do you have copies of the amendments, by the way?
I do.
You do. Okay. On the first page, and we're talking about farm stands, including structures designed and used for the sale and promotion of farm crops and livestock grown on farms in a local agricultural area. Is that language pretty much okay with you guys, you think?
Yeah, and that is, Chair Krupp, members of the committee, that is current, that is in the current law, and I do think that as the example with the farmer who lives 2 miles down who may be selling squash, and it may be easier to have one farm stand shared by five individual farmers.
Sure.
I do think that it would be, that it is, it makes sense to me that we would say that it would be grown on farms in the local agricultural area. That's a relevant constraint in my mind.
Do you have more difficulty with, as we continue on, in talking about line four, and for the sale of incidental retail items, and then structures or equipment designed and used for the display, perhaps of those items, or of also farm products, and then getting to the idea on the demonstration or use of farm crops, farm animals, and farm implements. Does any of that cause you problems and heartburn from your individual standpoints?
Well, I want to make sure I understand the question. The current language that much of what's printed here is not the source of our concern.
Okay.
In no manner is any of the existing statutory language a concern. And there are, the statute allows commercial activities in conjunction with farm use as a conditional use. And I can't cite to you all the case law on that. That's a conditional use, and meaning that a special permit is required of the county, but there is quite a bit of leeway and quite a bit of commercial operations that are approved in conjunction with farm use. The farm stands, on the other hand, are outright,
mm-hmm.
and without that review, and it's not intended to be something that is so broad as to allow all these other activities. That isn't to say all these other activities that we've talked about, even processing and other things like that, aren't things that we should be making sure can happen and even promote those. It's just that there are other provisions already in statute designed for those. There are safeguards on those, part of them that being the conditional use process. So our concern is generally here that we would take the farm stand language dealing with farm stands and expand it into structures that would be for promotional activities, and that's an undefined term, and we think that's a problem, and for other activities, banquets, et cetera, because that takes a very narrow provision, allowed outright and intended to be easy to get for something specially designed and defined as a farm stand, and turns it into a more amorphous thing that I think does require more scrutiny at the local level, and therefore, you know, ought to be dealt with instead under commercial activities in conjunction with farm use, which is already allowed in the statute, or some other provision.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, certainly.
Mr. Rendy, what does the word marketing mean to you?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm certainly not going to take a stab at trying to memorize my definitions or help you on that. It's too late in the evening for me, but I don't want to in some way hinder your line of questioning, but I'm not going to attempt a definition of marketing right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. New, here was my concern is because some people mean the same thing. You know, it depends on who interprets it, promotion and marketing. You know, to me, in business as a board member and senior VP of a large corporation, I wanted a sales division and a separate marketing division because I felt there were two different functions. You see what I'm saying? So here's what's happened in this law. Previously, you know, we talk about market. Now we use the word promotion. And what has occurred, though, is at the same time there's been an interpretation that calls that public entertainment. Now, never in my lifetime, and, you know, I have an MBA. I've been in business for years. Did we ever call, you know, marketing or promotion public entertainment in our businesses, any of them? So for us, see, here to... You know, whoever's making these judgments, and it's not you, it's whoever, I'm just saying whoever's doing the interpretation. I was going to use that for an example. It's not y'all. Whoever is using this interpretation is identifying that promotion and marketing is public entertainment, and under the law, it is not allowed at farm stands. So this is what happened, as I understand from the very, very good lawyer, very good attorney who drew these up. You know, we didn't check the constitutionality of Measure 7. Here's what happens. There's lots of definitions that have words that have different meanings. I mean, this was what I heard from the LCO office. I mean, this came from them. So all I'm just saying is I think what we're saying is, you know, in one context, we're thinking that promotion is different from marketing, and marketing and promotion, you know, are different functions than public entertainment, and the statute is simply prohibits public entertainment.
I'm just saying,
I think we've got definition term problems.
Representative Nelson, I don't really know all the circumstances there. The whole thing I think is partly clouded because we, you know, very likely we would want to hear from the county on that issue. A sidewalk isn't a structure. I can't imagine any county in the state regulates a sidewalk. So I don't know what the whole story is there. I do certainly agree with you that terms like marketing and promotion and all those things, that different people will have different ideas of what they mean. And that's simply been my point is it may very well be that you and I agree on what is promotion. But I think if you just put the word in the statute, And there isn't an agreed-on definition, that means the courts are going to figure it out after a lot of neighbors argue about it and for a long time. And I'm simply making a recommendation that we are concerned about the fact that it doesn't have a definition.
Okay. Kerry, your thoughts on the rest of that first paragraph of the amendments?
I would, Chair Krupp, I would say that we have substantial concerns about what that does to increase what could potentially be, may not be, but could potentially be non-farm uses in farm zones. 1000 Friends of Oregon's position is that we certainly try to support and would work to endeavor provide opportunities for value-added ideas in our farm zones to help farmers in the current economy as well in the future. However, the protection and preservation of farmlands for the continuance of the farm economy is also something important, and we need to balance those two issues. I think that the current provisions in the state law that provide for a balance of requiring that 75% of the commodities that are sold at a farm stand are related to farming in that area ensure that they are supportive of those actual farming enterprises while still allowing some flexibility for other products to be sold at the farm stand. In addition, we do have concerns about opening up additional opportunities for banquets and large public gatherings, which may conflict with other farmers' use in that area as well. I think it's an interesting issue that was raised by Tom Brawley with respect to could some of this be dealt with in the conditional use area, or is it appropriate that it be dealt with on one-time permits, perhaps for public gatherings, as is current law. I think those are probably more appropriate avenues to pursue than an outright permitted use. I think that pretty much
okay.
Comprises our position on the bill.
All right. Well, folks, it's late. I want to thank all of you for staying, and thank you for your comments and your diligence in answering our questions and helping us try to get a little further down the road on this concept. And I think we will be certainly talking about it again in the next few days. Thank you all very much. And
we
are going to close the public hearing on 3924, and we are adjourned. Thank you.